Hello, this is Michael Steeb from Kaplan Financial, and in this podcast, I'd like to talk about buying and selling businesses. The sale and purchase of a business may take many forms. The form of a sale will depend upon some factors, and tax will be one of these. Indeed, as accountants and tax advisors, we have to recognise the ever-present tension between the needs of vendors and purchasers. Generally speaking, and in a nutshell, vendors look for clean share sales, and purchasers often prefer asset purchases because there's less risk, it's cheaper due diligence, and there's always the issue of buying a dirty company. So, what do we need to know then? What are the options? It's essentially a choice of two, with a tentative third one tacked on the end. The two obvious ones are, of course, the sales of assets and the sales of shares. But I will mention, although I won't be covering in detail here, a halfway house where assets are either hived down or hived across into a new company, of course always referred to as a newco, and then the shares in that newco are sold. As I said, I won't be discussing the hive downs. I'll put that in another podcast. So I'm essentially here going to be looking at the contrast between selling assets and selling shares. And of course, I'll be looking at it from both ends, from the vendor's point of view and also from the purchaser's point of view. Let's start with assets. This is pretty straightforward. It's the simplest way to structure your sale, as it's just a direct sale of the assets themselves. So we're not talking here about shares. Let's have a look at the tax considerations for the vendor. Now, there is a matter of fact and degree here. If I'm just selling the odd assets, it may well be that the trade in the vendor's hands is not going to be substantially affected. So I just want to make clear here that I'm talking about a sale of so much of the assets and trade that effectively there's little or nothing that's left behind as far as the vendor is concerned. So, what are the tax considerations for the vendor? The first, of course, is that our trade will have ceased. That means we're going to have the end of an accounting period, and we need to think about all the bits that go with that. The rules on cessations. We've got to think about stock valuation to put that into account, because clearly when a trade ceases, there's no concept of closing stock. We may have to think about losses. And of course, if we're selling assets, there's likely to be, for capital allowances purposes, balancing adjustments. Let's now briefly think about, still from a vendor's point of view, a chargeable disposal. So let's put our capital gains tax hat on and get a grip with that one. The seller is going to make chargeable disposals of assets, and therefore we're going to have to do CGT calculations for all the relevant assets. It could be that there are some reliefs. If the seller is an individual, then we're going to be looking at our annual exemption, the possibility of entrepreneur's relief if we're thinking of retiring, or even with the right assets, for example, land and buildings, we may be able to roll over any resultant gains into qualifying purchases that qualify for the famous rollover relief. And those have got to be purchased within the 4-year period of 1 year before and 3 years after the transfer. So that's the CGT aspects. As far as the VAT is concerned, when we sell assets, again, it's a matter of fact and degree. If we sell a going concern, then we're pretty likely to fall within the TOGC rules. That's the transfer of a going concern. And as we all know, that's going to be what people colloquially refer to it as being a VAT-free transfer. Strictly, it's outside the scope of VAT, and it falls within the famous special provisions order. Now, in order to get this outside the scope treatment, you've got to satisfy all the conditions. And there are special conditions, a tightening of the rules, as it were, where the assets being transferred are vatted buildings. Now, I will be dealing with TOGCs in a future podcast, but suffice to say at this point, that we need to work out whether it is a TOGC or it's not. If it is VAT-free, and if it's not, then normal VAT rules on the asset sales. We have to work out what's being sold and what their VAT status actually is. But let's assume that we've sold our trade, or most of our assets here. What's left? Well, if we've got a company that's left, we're probably going to have pretty much a shell left pasty and shaking after all the assets have been transferred out. So the question would be, if we say got a vendor company, are they still carrying on a trade? If all of it's been sold, or substantially most of it, the answer to that is pretty likely to be no. You're very likely, if there is anything left, to no longer be eligible for the small companies rate, because remind yourself that you only get the small companies rate of corporation tax if you are trading. So you're probably, if it's a small company, become a close investment company. And that means that you're going to have corporation tax at the main rate. Incidentally, if the vendor is a company, then you've got your trade and your assets gone. You've suddenly got a pot of money inside there. How on earth are you going to get it out? Well, you've got to work out who the shareholders are and what do they actually want, whether the company's got distributable reserves, all the usual considerations there. But as far as we're concerned here, you need, as an advisor, to think about the individual preferences of the shareholders in terms of getting the profits out. Let's now move on and talk about the implications for the purchaser. And remember, we're still talking about assets. Now, some assets, the classic plant and machinery, will attract capital allowances. We've got the new annual investment allowance, the £50,000. We've got either 10% or 20%, depending upon what we've sold. And of course, in the current tax year, there's a temporary raising of the bar on the 20% general pool allowances from 20 to 40, although that goes from April, or the end of March, 2010. If you're a purchaser and you buy goodwill, then that's going to be an intangible asset under the FA 2002 rules, and that's where the tax will follow the accounting treatment. So you're simply going to capitalise that and then amortise that in the P&L, and that will be untouched for tax purposes. It's also important for the purchaser to work out whether the trade that they have acquired is a new trade or whether it very conveniently bolts on to their own trade and is in fact the same thing. Because if it's a new trade, you may find that you've got problems with brought forward trading losses, because you'll recall that the rule is that if you've got brought forward losses, they can only be put against future profits of the same trade. So if you've bought in a different trade, you may run into a problem. I think it's also important that the purchaser must appreciate that it will not be entitled to obtain any relief for any losses, trading losses, that the vendor may have had, because when you buy assets, the basic rule is that the losses do not piggyback the assets. If that's going to happen, you've got losses to consider, you're going to have to go for one of these hive downs. And as I said, I'll deal with that in another podcast. As far as the VAT is concerned, still on assets here, the purchaser is going to need to consider whether it's a TOGC and whether they need to take on the VAT registration. And the answer to that is normally no, don't touch it with a barge pole. But also, and much more important here, whether you as a purchaser will need to consider opting to tax on any of the vatted buildings, which you'll remember is the rule when you buy a vatted building and you want to have that free of VAT. While we're on indirect taxation, of course the stamp duty land tax rears its ugly head, because if you're buying buildings, then you're going to have stamp duty land tax at any rate up to 4%. In the second part of this podcast, I'm going to be talking about the sale and purchases of shares. Now, if you're selling shares, you're either going to be an individual or you're going to be a company. If you are a company selling the shares of one of your subsidiaries, then that's going to be a chargeable disposal of shares. and that's going to give rise almost certainly to a capital gain. Remind yourself that as a company, you get indexation, which runs up to the date of disposal. So, in principle, a capital gain, a chargeable gain, which will be subject to corporation tax, will be arising in the hands of the vendor company. But there's a very nice relief called the substantial shareholders exemption, which effectively says that if you own at least 10% of the shares of the subsidiary that you're about to sell, then you are going to get an exemption from tax. And that's a very tasty relief indeed. If you're a corporate shareholder, let's keep with that just for a second, you might want to consider ways to reduce your gain if there is indeed a gain that's potentially in play. You might, for example, consider a pre-sale dividend. So if you've got surplus cash in the subsidiary that's being sold, you might want to try and get that out by way of a dividend up to the parent. And of course, the advantage of that is that it reduces the value of the subsidiary, and consequently it reduces the price and the resulting capital gain. Oh, incidentally, that'll have a positive impact on the stamp duty, and more of that in just a second, on the purchaser. When the parent company sells a subsidiary, that's also going to have an effect on the corporation tax group considerations. And I mean by that that there's going to be a reduction in a number of associate companies, and there may be group relief restrictions as well. As far as the VAT is concerned, sale of shares is exempt. And even if that company had been fully taxable, this is the parent company, then making that exempt sale is going to make the parent company partially exempt, if only for that year. And they will need to do all the partial exemption calculations. As far as stamp duty is concerned, that's never an issue for the vendor, but it is an issue for the purchaser. And the difference, of course, between an asset sale and a share sale is that as far as the purchaser is concerned, if you buy shares, that's only going to be 0.5% stamp duty on the value of the shares, as opposed to up to 4% stamp duty land tax when you buy land and buildings. If you're an individual that's selling shares, we've now dealt with companies enough, I think, you're going to have a chargeable disposal. Pretty straightforward CGT, likely, of course, to be a capital gain, in which case you've got your annual exemption to think about, possible capital losses, and entrepreneur's relief. Oh, by the way, there's no possibility of having rollover relief on that because shares do not qualify. Right, well, let's look at the shares from the purchaser's point of view. As far as the corporation tax aspects are concerned, the trade continues. There's simply no cessation provisions. The whole of the company is moving from owner number one to owner number two, so pretty much you haven't got an issue. The only proviso here is that if you've got losses, they will be preserved, but subject to the very important McKinna Code, and those are the rules in Section 768 of ICTA, which is that losses can be lost if there is, and the McKinna Code stands for a major change in the nature or conduct of a trade. If you're buying shares, then let's have a look at another angle here, and that is that if you're buying them as part of a corporate group, then there's going to be a change in the number of associated companies, and you need to think about that as well. Another capital gains aspect of buying shares is that there may be exit charges here. These are under Section 179 of the Taxation of Chargeable Gains Act. And it's another one of the issues about buying companies, that there may be a charge on, say, buildings that have been transferred into the company that you are buying, which have previously been tax-free. That's something that always makes me nervous, and I think that good advisors should be aware that the exit charges may be in play, and you need to tread carefully where there have been recentish transfers, that's within 6 years, of land and buildings into the company that you are trying to acquire. Okay, let's think about tax relief for the purchaser. And remember, we're still talking shares here. Of course, the main rule is that in contrast to buying assets, there's no immediate tax relief on the purchase of the shares. You only get the relief for the purchase when you finally sell them, and that'll be a straightforward CGT computation. While we're on indirect tax, stamp duty on the sale of the shares will be payable by the purchaser, and as we said, that's going to be at 0.5%. As far as VAT is concerned, the whole thing's almost a non-issue because as a purchaser, you've not made any supply, and so we're not going to be very worried by the VAT aspects. In conclusion then, as accountants and tax advisors, we're often asked to give advice on these transactions, and I think it's important that we recognise that there are non-tax as well as tax implication. For example, on a sale and purchase of shares, because you're buying a company, that's going to require a higher and therefore more expensive form of due diligence on the part of the buyer. And as far as the tax is concerned, the tension between the requirements of purchasers and vendors is always one to bear in mind. And that's why the halfway house of a hive down or a hive across is sometimes used in order to get the best of both worlds. And I'll be talking about those in a future podcast. Cheerio.